Vayihyu chayei Sarah me'ah shana v'yasrim shana v'sheva shanim shnei chayei Sarah. Sarah's lifetime was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. The years of Sarah's life.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Chayei Sarah. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Kaf, Mar Cheshvan, 5774, corresponding to October 24th. And now you know. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mia'amod. Ki imacha hasalicha lama'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mi kol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha, umiafela leora, umishibud legu'ula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar, amen. Let's get in right into Parshat HaShavu and see where we go. The Sedra begins with telling us the number of years that Sarah Imenu died. It implies that she died, and yet if you turn back a page at the end of Parshat Vayera, you don't see her death. The pasuk that follows the announcement that the life of Sarah was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years, the life of Sarah, then says, Vatamas Sarah b'Kiryat Arba, hi Chevron, b'Eretz Kenaan, that Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, which is Chevron, in the land of Kenaan. Vayavo Avraham, lispod lisara v'livkota. And Avraham came to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. But at the end of last week's Sedra of Vayera, which is apparently where she died, or when she died, better, it doesn't say that she died. Our sources tell us that she died as a result of Akedat Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac. And even though this is an old comment, I am intrigued by it, because you can say it in both directions. Some say that Sarah Imenu, who had waited till the advanced age of 90 years old till she had a child, is now finding out, and our Midrashim tell us that it was the Satan who told her, that Avraham was taking Yitzchak not on a field trip, but on a final trip to go to Har HaMoriah and to offer his son, your son, Sarah, as an olah, a burnt offering. And the simple way of understanding it is, she could not handle that news, and she died. I don't know which commentary says this, but I saw a long time ago that there was an interesting twist to this hypothesis. that Sarah Imenu indeed heard about Avraham's instructions by God to offer his son on an altar, and she was afraid that he wouldn't do it. You have to look back at the history that Sarah was well aware of Avraham. Sarah was the one who came to her husband Avraham and said, get rid of Hagar and her son Yishmael, really get rid of Yishmael and his mother Hagar. And our commentaries teach us that she was concerned about the negative influence upon her son Yitzchak. And Avraham was very, very upset with that suggestion. He did not want to do it at all. This was his other son, Yishmael. And God had to say to Avraham, whatever Sarah tells you, do. Ki v'Yitzchak yikare lecha zara, because it is through Yitzchak, Isaac, that you will be identified as your lineage. Your lineage will come from Yitzchak, not from Yishmael. Yishmael does have children. He has 12. That's that same number as we have not had yet, but Yaakov Avinu will have 12 sons. It's also the same 12 that Nachor, Avraham's brother, has already had. And Yishmael has that, and Yishmael had been promised to father large nation. So that's not the problem, and many of those descendants claim their ancestor as Abraham. Yet as far as the Jewish people are concerned, it is Avraham through Yitzchak, through Yaakov, and through the Shvatim, the brothers, the tribes, that we identify the generations of the Jewish nation. So, Sarah, knowing Avraham's love of his children, pictured in her mind God saying to Avraham, offer your only son, Yitzchak, as a sacrifice, and his refusal to do so. Failure of his test of faith in God. When she saw Avraham and Yitzchak returning from the Akedah, she figured that her fear was realized and he did not carry it out, and she died. So, tells you a little bit about what our sages felt was the character and nature of Sarah Imenu and of Avraham, and they made a nice couple. And that's the story, and that's the connection of the death of Sarah with the previous portion, which was Akedat Yitzchak. Now that Avraham comes to tend to the funeral, he needs to acquire a burial place for Sarah. A stranger in a strange land, as Avraham had been, doesn't need a burial place until somebody dies. It's not the thing that you think about. Now, of course, he needs it. And he approaches the local inhabitants, B'nai Chait, and he asks them to put him in touch with Ephron Hachiti. And Ephron is the owner of the area that became known, or was known, as Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is what Avraham wanted as a burial place. And after the people of Chait and Ephron himself had offered Avraham anywhere he wants, just take it, it's for the taking, Avraham insists on paying money because he wants that purchase on record. And he strikes a deal with Ephron for 400 silver talents or silver coins, whatever. And the field, the cave and the field and the surrounding area goes to become the possession of Avraham Avinu, the first possession in the land of Israel, way before the land was given by God to the Jewish people to conquer and to settle. So it's a significant and important thing. Upon completion of the transaction, the field becomes Avraham's. He buries his wife Sarah in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, the reputed burial place of Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava. At this time, the future burial place of Avraham, then of Yitzchak and Rivka, then of Yaakov and Leah. Hence, Kiryat Arba, not counting Adam and Chava, who are not identified as being buried there specifically in the Torah. Next order of business for Avraham Avinu, and his life is winding down, is to provide a suitable bride, wife, for his son Yitzchak. I can't overemphasize the significance of the second generation. Avraham Avinu forged the first link in a chain, an unbroken chain to this very day. But a first link is nothing more than a small ring of precious metal. And it doesn't become a chain until a second link is attached to the first, is intertwined with the first. That second link is vital because no matter how great Avraham was, no matter what credit he gets for rediscovering monotheism, and they had a unique relationship with God, and his bywords were chesed and tzedek, all of that would be fine, and we wouldn't be connected to it at all without the link of Yitzchak Avinu. And then, obviously, it goes on to Yaakov, and it continues on and on and on, and every generation to this day and onward is another link in that tradition, another link in that chain. This is echoed in the Haftarah, the Haftorah of this week, which starts with King David ill and at the end of his life, and he needs to provide the correct, appropriate, right successor to himself, and that, based on a promise he had made to his wife Bathsheba, is to turn the throne over to Shlomo, King Solomon. And there are interesting parallels in the story. There were other sons of David who claimed the throne. And similarly, Ishmael claimed descent and therefore the right to continue the Abrahamic line. Be that as it may, what Avraham does is call his first faithful servant, who we know to be Eliezer. It's always a fun riddle to ask children if they don't know it already. Hand them a chumash or direct them to a chumash and say, the first one to tell me how many times the name Eliezer appears in Parshat Chaye Sarah will win a prize. And participants eagerly take their chumash and they turn to Chayasara and they go down and they read as fast as they can. And they do it a second time because they were not able to find even one incidence. This is also well known that Eliezer is not named in Parshat Chayasara. He is identified many times either as Ha'ish, the man, or Ha'eved, the servant. And if you analyze, we're talking about a few dozen times. If you analyze each time he is identifiable as connected with Avraham, he's called Ha'eved, the servant. When he is standing as Avraham's representative before Betuel and Lavan and family, then he's Ha'ish. And skipping ahead to the end of the Parsha, there's a very interesting pasuk which spells it out, or doesn't spell it out, but it presents it very, very clearly. And that is that when Eliezer is still negotiating for Rivka to come with him, it says the family wanted her to stay a number of months, up to a year, and Eliezer wanted her to come immediately, and they said, Nikra'a la na'ara v'nishala et piha, let us call the girl and ask her what she prefers. And they did such, and they said, do you want to go with this man? And she says, yes, I will go. Vayishlechu et Rivka achotam. They sent Rivka, their sister, and with her nursemaid, v'et Eved Avraham, and the servant of Avraham, v'et Anashav, and his entourage. Then the family blessed her, and then the Torah says that Rivka and her handmaidens arose, and they got onto the camels, v'telachna acharei ha'ish. They went after the man, v'yikach ha'eved, and the servant took et Rivka vayelach, and the Eved took Rivka and went. In the same verse, he transits between being Ho'ish and becoming Ho'eved again. And what happens at that moment, which to me explains why you have this in the same verse, is until Rivka agreed and actually picked herself up and went after Eliezer, he was to her Ho'ish, the man. Once she agreed to go, and once she starts going, she becomes part of Avraham's family. She becomes betrothed to Yitzchak, part of Avraham's family, and therefore the Torah in that same verse tells us, Vayikach ha'eved et Rivka, the servant took Rivka, and they went. So, that's about Eliezer, and that's about that riddle you could ask. You don't say how many times does Eliezer's name appear in the Parsha, because that's, everyone will remember, oh yeah, it's a trick question, because there are none. But you give a chumash, and you say, see who could count how many times. And even before you say that, you should ask, who do you think is the main character in Chayei Sarah? So, at the beginning, it's Avraham, and but the bulk of the Sedra is Eliezer. He's the man. He's the servant. But he's not Eliezer. He's the identity. His identity is the task that he is performing that makes his identity. Okay, but let's back to where we were up to. We have this famous scene now that Eliezer is sworn to his task by Avraham and is sent with 10 camels laden with all kind of goodies. And he goes to Avraham's hometown in search of a suitable shidduch, bride, wife for his master's son, Yitzchak. So he gets to the well in the spring at night, or in the evening, rather, towards evening, and he realizes he has no idea what to do. So the Torah tells us that he prayed to God. He says, God, the God of my master, Avraham, make me successful this day, do me a kindness, and do a kindness with my master. Here I am at the spring of water, and the young girls of the area are coming out to draw water for the evening. It shall pass. Let it be that the maiden to whom I shall say, please lift up your jug so that I may drink, and who replies, drink and I will even water your camels, her will you have designated for your servant for Isaac, and may I know through her that you have done kindness with my master. The Torah continues by saying the words were hardly out of his mouth. Rivka shows up on the scene, and Rivka is from Avraham's family, gives her lineage, and she has a jug, a pitcher on her shoulder, and she's exceedingly good-looking and a true maiden. And she starts to draw water. The Eliezer, Ha'eved, runs to greet her and says, give me something to drink. And she says, drink, sir. and she quickly lowers her pitcher and lets him drink. When he finishes drinking, she says, "I will also draw water for your camels until they are satiated." And she quickly goes ahead and does that. And Eliezer is struck by the speed in which his prayer was answered. But he's not really sure yet, tells us the Torah. And when the camels finish to drink, he gives her a gift of gold bracelets and other jewelry and asks, "Who are you? Who is your father? And any place where I can spend the night?" She says, "I am the daughter of Betuel, who was born to Milcah. Father was Nahor." Avraham's brother and Eliezer knew that. "And we also have plenty of hay for the camels and a place for them and you to sleep." He bows to God, Eliezer, and says, "Baruch Hashem, Elokei Adoni Avraham, who did not leave from giving mercy to my master and make my journey successful, my mission successful." She goes and she tells her father and brother, and that's when we're introduced to Lavan, who does not have a sterling reputation in Jewish lore and thought and actual verses. A little bit of a conniver here and there. Okay, we have two directions to go. We're approaching the end of the first half of the show. One direction is to continue the story, and the other direction is to spend a little time at Eliezer's prayer and the way it was answered and the way that he behaved. And later in the Parsha, he repeats the story to Lavan's family, Rivka's family, and there are some significant changes there, but we'll get to most of that after a short break, which you might not have because you could be listening to the two halves put together. But on that note, hold that thought, and I'll be right back. Welcome back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Chayei Sarah, and we were just about to take a look, a closer look, at Eliezer at the well and the spring. On the one hand, there are commentaries that criticize Eliezer for relying on an omen. Rambam seems to say that. An omen is, I don't know exactly what to do. I don't know which is going to be the best choice. So if a blue bird will fly across my path right to left, then I'll do this. And if it goes left to right, I'll do that. I would say flipping a coin to make a decision is like that. I really should clarify this. I think that if a person has equal options, and, well, I'm not so sure about flipping a coin, but one of the ideas behind an omen is pinning a decision on an event which has nothing to do with the decision at all. And that's forbidden. On the other hand, many commentaries defend Eliezer by choosing not a flippant, frivolent kind of sign, but by choosing a sign that would indicate the character of the girl that he was looking for. It is not everyone that will even offer a drink to a stranger, and certainly not to draw water for 10 thirsty camels, and that is a sign of a a nice girl, a chesed, a kind girl. On the other hand, Eliezer's little mistake was rushing to give this girl jewelry before he said, "Who are you and where are you from?" On the other hand, one of the things in Eliezer's favor is that he didn't assume that he was successful. He wondered if he was, and then proceeded, and when he finally did get to the question of who are you, he realized she's from Avraham's family, and he thanked God for it. So by and large, it was an okay move. The one puzzle piece that I'm aware of that we need to add is the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentions three in Tanakh, three people, who did not ask appropriately and got a good answer anyway. Always reminds me of the whole collection of genie jokes. One of the very, very first ones that I'm aware of from way back is a guy who owned a candy store, the old type of candy store with a soda fountain, and he was cleaning up some old empty bottles that he had around, and he got to one of those old Coca-Cola bottles, and when he rubbed it, a genie came out and offered him a wish. And the guy said, "I've never taken a vacation in 20 years of my running the store. I have nobody to cover for me, even if I would want to take a vacation." So the genie said, "Don't worry. Where do you want to go?" "Florida." "No problem. I'll cover the store. 2 weeks in Florida, all expenses paid." Snap, and the guy is gone. And the genie gets behind the counter, and first customer comes in and says, "Make me a malted." And the genie goes, "Poof, you're a malted." Now that is answering the person who said, "Make me a malted," literally, and he got exactly what he asked for. What he meant to ask for is, "Can you make a malted milkshake and give it to me or sell it to me and I will drink it?" Of course, you don't say all of that. The colloquial way to say it is, "Make me a malted," but the point is you have to be very careful what you say. And there are dozens and dozens of genie jokes, some better than others, that you could find on the internet. And it all comes from the concept, not that it comes from the Mishnah, but it comes from the concept expressed in the Mishnah of asking correctly and asking incorrectly, improperly. So the Mishnah says that Eliezer didn't ask properly because he could have gotten any girl, not a suitable one, who just would have happened to be in a good mood and offered water and to water the camels, but he was answered properly by getting Rivka Imenu for Yitzchak Avinu. I wonder if Rivka kept her maiden name of Imenu after she got married. Probably not, but maybe yes. Just kidding. Anyway, so that's what Eliezer did. You see one thing, interestingly, when he recounts the story to loved one and family, he realizes that he jumped the gun, and when he tells a story, he asked the girl first who she was before he gave her the gifts of the bracelets and the rings and whatever. In any event, that that's the issue with Eliezer. Now, the episode of Eliezer being in the house and side points that Lavan pushes himself in the forward position in front of his father Betuel, which shows the kind of character he had, his greediness, his conniving attempts to do away with Eliezer, a lot of it based on Midrashim, some of it based on Psukim. And the bottom line is Eliezer is successful in his mission, and he gets to take Rivka back with her Meineket, who we find out later was named Devorah. And commentaries explain that when Avraham and Sarah basically converted a lot of people in Haran and took them to Eretz Canaan on their journey, they purposely left Devorah back home exactly to help raise a girl, Rivka, who would be suitable to marry Avraham's son, Yitzchak. And the only other time we know who this is when she dies, and the Torah is very kindly, so to speak, towards this unknown character of Devorah Meineket Rivka. But if you see her as the one who prepared Rivka for her destiny, then she needs the credit as well. After all of that, we go to the wrap-up of Avraham's life. And it's noteworthy that after the burial of Sarah and the acquisition of the burial place and the marrying off of Yitzchak, Avraham basically becomes a private citizen, what I call, and his role as father of many nations and father of the Jewish people has been retired, and he remarries. But you get the feeling that it's not for the destiny of the Jewish people. Exactly the opposite. It is Avraham as a person, and he marries Keturah. Our tradition says that that was Hagar, whom he took back after Sarah died, after Yitzchak was married. And the Torah mentions children that he had, and that Avraham gave gifts to all of his children, but the title of Avraham Avinu, so to speak, and everything that that means is passed on rock only through Yitzchak in fulfillment of God's command. And it mentions that Avraham died at the ripe old age of 175, and he was buried by both Yitzchak and Yishmael in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, in the field that he got from Ephron, the son of Tzohar, the Chiti, which was near Mamre. The field which Avraham bought from B'nai Chait, there they buried Avraham and Sarah, his wife. After Avraham dies, God blesses Yitzchak, and Yitzchak dwells in a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Stay tuned for next week's Parsha of Toledot to see what happens with Yitzchak. In the meantime, the last portion of Chayei Sarah is the lineage of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. Significant, I think, excuse me, is the verse. Ve'ela toledot, these are the descendants of Yishmael, son of Avraham, who was born to Hagar, the Egyptian maid, the maid of Sarah, to Avraham. It's a lengthy introduction as to who Yishmael is, but it is solidly linking him to Avraham, and this supports the notion that Yishmael repented his ways in his later years and was a source of nachat to his father Avraham as well. Ve'ela Shemot B'nei Yishmael, and then it lists the children of Yishmael, as I mentioned before, 12, and that's not an insignificant number here. It mentions that Yishmael died with the same kind of language that the Parsha started with Sarah's death. He died at Ma'at Shana U'Shloshim Shana V'Sheva Shanim, 100 years and 30 years and 7 years, total 137. And he died, and he joined his ancestors, as the expression goes. And that's it, pretty much, for Parshat Chayei Sarah. It's relatively short, especially for Bereshit. It's the second shortest of the 12 Sedras in Bereshit. And basically, Chayei Sarah gives us that strong, strong feeling of a link between Avraham, continue to Yitzchak, and, as the Sedras will unfold, the rest of the introduction to the Jewish nation. We are called B'nai Yisrael. Yisrael is the other name of Yaakov. We're not known as B'nai Avraham or B'nai Yitzchak, although we are, but that's another discussion. Yitzchak's role, I believe, first and foremost, he is the link to the next generation. To modernize and internalize and personalize, not me personally, but in general, I could actually personalize it to myself. Avraham represents the convert to Judaism or the Baal Tshuva, the person who grew up not religious, not knowing anything about it, discovers it, picks it up, takes it upon himself, and becomes a Torah-observant Jew, either by conversion or by conviction to choose that path of life. Yitzchak is the first FFB. FFB is the slang term for frum, from birth, religious from the beginning, and from birth, and he's different, qualitatively different from Avraham Avinu. Avraham lived someplace, traveled to another place, came to Eretz Yisrael, went down to Egypt, came back to Eretz Yisrael, and Yitzchak was born and raised and lived his entire life in the land of Israel. Avraham was an idolator at the beginning of his life. He questioned at a portion of his life and came to belief in God. Yitzchak was born to a believing parents of Avraham and Sarah and grew up in that environment. It is the concern and prayer and wish of a convert to Judaism that he has or she have children who are born Jewish, who are raised Jewish from the beginning, and develop into the sincere kind of Jews which they feel they are, but from a different perspective in life. I don't know if I'm being a little too cryptic here. Let me spell it out. There is a difference between someone who is born to a religious family, grows up in a religious home, goes to elementary school, a day school, yeshiva, katana, goes to yeshiva high school, goes to advanced studies in yeshiva, and is brought up that way from the beginning. He is different from a person who grew up not religious or not Jewish and came to it later in life. In my family, I've told this before, I have my father's parents. My father's mother came from a religious home in Russia. They left Russia back in the 1890s sometime, went to the United States, and she, my grandma, was one of six children, the only one who remained religious. My grandfather also came from Russia, from Kiev, and also in the 1890s sometimes. I might have the dates of my grandmother a little off, but that's my grandfather. And he came from a totally non-religious family, a partially anti-religious family, pretty much knew nothing until he was attracted to my grandma, and she said to him, "I can't go out with you," or whatever they called it in those days, "because you're not religious." And he loved her so much that he wanted to become religious. And he did. And the rabbi of my grandmother's shul took him under his wing and taught him things, and he became a totally observant Jew to the day he died. And with that kind of background, the next generation, which is my father, my aunt, and my uncle, they were born already beyond the trials and tribulations that my grandfather went to, the soul searching, the thinking, and the double thinking, and the triple thinking. And If I could say in my own family, my grandfather was in the category of an Avraham Avinu, and my father, therefore, was a Yitzchak Avinu. His name was Moshe Yitzchak, not on purpose like that, but that's how it happens. And it's not only, in this case, he was born Jewish but not religious and could be a convert situation. There are very important similarities there, I believe. But you always wonder if the enthusiasm that you can have as an adult making a decision to become Torah observant, how does that compare to anything in the FFB's experience where he never had that choice and that intelligent, self-made decision to pursue a Torah way of life? We, who grew up in religious homes, I say we, including myself, I often ponder, I was going to say fantasize, I don't know if I do, but I often ponder what it would have been like to have been born a Christian, and would I have at one point in my life leaned towards exploration of other religions and been attracted to Judaism? And would I have undergone a development towards that direction? Would I have converted, or would I have become a very sincere, committed Christian? And I'll never know. And I'm not sorry that I'll never know, but that's a point. I'll never know. And a person who did do that process knows. So Avram Avinu is one role model, and Yitzchak Avinu is another role model, and Yaakov, we'll see in future weeks, is a different kind of role model. To summarize it and put it a little, a little differently, I would imagine every convert and every Baal Tshuva wants his children to be frum from birth, but would like to imbue in them, by stories and by teaching, some of the feelings that they can't have on their own, but they can have by empathizing with their father or mother, and examine aspects of Judaism for themselves. Personally, I have gone through, in my mind, at different times of my earlier life, decision processes and recommitment. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but let's put it like this. I never signed on to be a Torah observant Jew. I was born that way. But I have gone through a recommitting process that has become personal. In other words, I can point to certain times in my life that I said to myself that up till now, I've been doing X, Y, and Z because that's what I've always done and I don't know anything else. And from this point on, I am taking my commitment to Shabbat or Kashrut or Brachot or whatever it is and personalizing it so that I believe that I also came to it on my own. I can't come to it on my own like a Baal Tshuva did, but I could come to it on my own in a rethinking process. These are some of the thoughts that I wanted to share with you from Parshat Chayei Sarah. In the very short time I have left for the show, I want to just share a train of thought. This train of thought has nothing to do with Chayei Sarah specifically. It has to do with our hold on the land of Israel. But it's a train of thought that started with the elections on Tuesday for mayors and municipal councils and the connection to some of those candidates and some of those parties with the national counterparts and things that you read in the newspaper. And a statement that I saw in this morning's Jerusalem Post that Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu, stressed to the Palestinians that an absolute thing they must do is commit to the security of Israel and the acceptance of Israel as a Jewish state. Now, aside from the fact that personally I'm opposed to a two-state solution, in talking the two-state solution thing, I think people have to remember that our insistence for security, recognition of the Palestinian guarantee of our security, and the Jewishness of the state are not things that are equal to their demands for right of return and for all of Jerusalem and for all of the territory conquered during the Six-Day War. These two things are a given, and they have to be seen as a given when you're talking about what we offer and what the other side offers, and it should not be confused. I don't know if that was confusing by itself, but I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lahish Tameah.